over the lunch hour. Is there anybody who wants to speak today on the two pending petitions who hasn't signed up with our marshal? Otherwise, I'm going to go off the list that she's created for me, so I don't want to miss anybody. Okay, Judge Robert Collins, we'll begin with you, please.
Chief Justice, Justices, may it please the Court. My name is Rob Collins. I'm the Oneida Family Court Judge. I've been in that role since September of 2013. Just to follow up on two points that were raised by justices earlier, first to Justice Prosser, regarding the statistics in the family court, as of today's date, we've had approximately 410 hearings in 2015.
400 plus?
410 hearings in 2015.
Thank you.
And to follow up on Justice Ziegler, at the present time, the Oneida Code of Laws does not have a provision that addresses the discretionary transfer of cases from tribal court to state court. In situations where parties have expressed to the family court clerk that they wanted to do so, I've had them file a motion for transfer of jurisdiction. We've gotten all the parties in the child support agency together for a hearing, and we've been able to work out most of those issues either through a stipulation or through having the parties go through the peacemaking process. I've also identified that the parties could pay a filing fee and file an action in state court. They could file a motion under 801.54 sub 3
or another. Sorry,
801.54 sub 3.
Thank you.
Or they could go to the Oneida Legislature to have that added to the Oneida Court of Laws. If there's going to be a training where we're going to have all the entities together that Justice Gableman referenced earlier, one thing that I would suggest that we talk under 801.543 is a way for the courts to communicate to make sure that that provision of law isn't used to form shop, where a party gets a decision in tribal court, they didn't get what they wanted, then they automatically go to the state court trying to get an order that indicates something else.
And Judge, excuse me, just to be clear, Your Honor, when I threw out the idea of the meeting, I didn't want to put any parameters or labels or identify it. Just a free-flowing, certainly that could be part of the conversation, but in case any of our listeners would construe your comments as me having been more narrow than I intended, I just wanted to make that.
Okay, thank you, Justice. Sure. The only thing that I'm going to repeat that was previously said is in agreement with Judge Moore that I believe that 801.54 is working. I believe that there's very few issues. We heard from Ms. Dallas today that she lodged an objection to a notice to transfer the case. The judge heard that objection and used their discretion to deny it. I think that that's what 801.4 was designed to do.
Now, she objected in circuit court, if I understood
correct.
Her.
And the circuit court used their discretion to deny the transfer to state.
This transfer, she had an opportunity, and that's what 801.54 says. She's supposed to do that.
Correct. One of the things
those,
that
I'm just going to ask you, when did those notices go out? I mean, are they the last week or the last month, or have they been given all the time?
Well, in my review of the case files, and I read them all before each case, I've identified those notices going out back to 2010.
So as of 2010 or thereabouts, at least in the files you've looked at, notice of the transfer and an opportunity to be heard are given.
Correct.
Okay. And the notices look something like the notices that Ms. Chesnick filed with us?
Correct.
Thank you.
The one thing that I wanted to address today is an item that I saw in Chief Justice Rogensack's dissent, actually all three dissents to the rule, and that was what the rights and procedures are that are available in tribal court. Again, I was appointed as the family court judge in 2013. You'll probably hear today some reference to the Appeals Commission, which was abolished in March of 2015. There were some additional educational requirements that were put into place. For the family court, those educational requirements were that the judge have a law degree, that the judge be licensed to practice law, and that the judge have at least 5 years of family court experience. And prior to working for Oneida, I prosecuted child welfare legal matters for Brown County. In fact, I was here in December of 2010 arguing a termination of parental rights case, to which this trustee chair to my left failed when I sat down on the end. The wheel popped off and I almost fell.
The statute of limitations is wrong.
I'll just note that I am not an Oneida tribal member, that I don't have any goal to retaliate against any tribal members. I'll note that the tribal code does include provisions for recusal in the canons of ethics, that there are provisions in Oneida Code of Laws Chapter 150 that address complaints against judicial officers and potential removal. Just kind of going over some of the rights that we have. Initially, when I took over as the judge, any tribal member or any member, in fact, that had a decision rendered against them in the Appeals Commission had the rights to a de novo review before me, where I would essentially relitigate that order and issue a new order. Of the thousands of cases that we have opened, we had 8 requests, and all 8 of those reached stipulation when the parties came in for the de novo hearing.
So you say that they were first decided by another level of court and then came to you afterwards?
Correct. And anyone that had an order issued by the Oneida Appeals Commission had the ability to request review before me when I started. Okay. Our court system has a right to notice. Personal service is the first tier of notice. Certified mail with return receipt is the second. The notice by publication is the third. Parties have a right to file a written response to that notice, or they can respond orally at the hearing. Our rules of civil procedure law allow for a right to request discovery, whether that be through depositions, interrogatories, requests for productions of documents, or other discovery methods. We have summary judgment available. Parties have the rights to call witnesses. They have the rights to a subpoena issued by the court commanding a witness to appear before the family court. Obviously, there is no jury trial in the United Family Court, but as Judge Nielsen said, in the family court matters in the state court, there's no jury trial that occurs. Parties have the right to cross-examine witnesses called by the other side. In cases involving legal custody and physical placement, or where I otherwise determine that there's cause for concern for the welfare of children involved with cases, I have the ability to appoint the guardian ad litem. While all of our guardian ad litems are not licensed attorneys, some of them are, our guardian ad litems go through a training that's put on by myself and Attorney Paul Stenzel, who's spoken to this court about Rule 801.54. I'm pleased to announce that about a year and a half ago, through an 801.54 hearing, we were able to recruit the retired judge, Mark Warpinski. He was representing a family member in the jurisdiction allocation conference. The judges decided that the case would come to tribal court, and after coming through the hearing, he pulled me aside, asked if he could apply to be a guardian ad litem, and he's now one of the very best guardian ad litems that I have appearing before me. The parties have the right to appeal the case, either before a 3 or 5 judge panel. They have the right to request transcripts from their hearings. In cases where the parties don't understand the English language, I have worked with International Translators Incorporated out of Green Bay. The court will appoint and pay for a translator so they can understand what's going on during the court hearing. We do have contempt for child support. The court issues fines, can issue license suspensions, credit bureau reporting, intercepts of income or other payments, and I'm currently in discussion with the United Business Committee to decide whether or not we want to pursue incarceration as a penalty for contempt. I'm proud to announce that the Oneida Family Court has partnered up with Family Access Solutions, which is a program that offers supervised visitation and exchange services for families that have experienced domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. That program is approximately 1 mile north of our courthouse, so it's very close to the Oneida Reservation. They're very open to working with us, and having them provide that service has been something that I'm very proud of. As a lot of the Oneida Appeals Commissioners have stated in the past, we have a peacemaking system that allows parties to come in, meet with the peacemaker, and not only resolve the dispute that's before them, but also try to repair the relationship. And what I've seen out of that has been extremely valuable. Just to give you an example, we had a case that started out in state court. It transferred through 801.54. I counted that the parties had 5 contested hearings. The mother presented testimony that she had lost her house due to attorney's fees. And when they came in on their de novo review hearing, I recommended peacemaking. Both parties agreed to go through that process. And after, I believe, 9 hours of peacemaking, they came to a resolution, and they both left saying that they should have done this years ago. So basically, just to address the Chief Justice's concerns, those are the rights and procedures that we have. I want to address just one other thing that was said, and that's about closed hearings. The Oneida Court of Laws does indicate that records involving juvenile matters are confidential. The family court law does reference that legal custody and physical placement hearings are closed. But when family members come, I give them an opportunity to make a statement to the court because I'm interested in hearing what they have to say. Unfortunately, there are many times where the family members' desires and wishes don't necessarily mirror the young parents who are in court. So I have those family members go out in the lobby during the hearing so I can determine what the parents want and we can kind of get at what's in the best interest of the children involved. So I urge you to keep 8015.
Before you go on, so are hearings that involve child welfare issues the only ones that are closed? I got the view that more than that were closed.
Divorce hearings where there are children involved, legal custody hearings, physical placement hearings, petitions to establish third-party legal custody, and hearings where you have, like, a family member or somebody else who has a relationship with the child and they're filing for visitation rights. Those would be the closed hearings.
Okay. They all involve children.
What?
They all involve children?
Correct.
Thank you. A judge, some of the best procedures and rights of people are oft-written. They look good on paper, but they are not enforced in real life. You know what I mean? So my question to you is, everything you said seems to be very due process and initial rights and appellate rights. Transcripts and opportunity to be heard. But if I listen to Ms. Dallas, she says that's not how it really works.
Well, in the almost 2.5 years that I've been there, I have found that my experience with the judicial system is different. Mm-hmm. But I'm not in the position that Ms. Dallas was. I was not around when the prior system was hearing family court cases. I don't know how things were practiced in that court.
So the procedures that you just set forth, when were they adopted, do you know?
Well, those procedures went into effect, at least the new rules of civil procedure, in November of 2015. There was a delay where the new judiciary, due to the request to go through additional training, pushed back the start date until March 1st of 2015. But since I had been in place since September of 2013, I started using those rules in November.
And how many judges are there that would be doing these proceedings?
Well, we currently have 9 judges in the judiciary. In the Court of Appeals, there are 5 judges, 1 that's full-time and 4 that are part-time. In our trial court, we have 3 full-time judges. And then in the family court, there's just 1 judge, me. I do not qualify to hear trial court and appellate court cases because I'm not a tribal member. And currently, I do not believe that any of the appellate court judges or trial court judges qualify to hear the family court cases because of the additional educational requirements.
And your education is done by the educational programs. You mentioned that Mr. Stencil and others do the GAL program.
Well, we did the GAL program, but I was a graduate of the University of Wisconsin Law School. And then I had the experience requirement as I handled family court cases for the greater than the required 5-year period.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a movement of both for cost and for increasing representation to recognize that not everybody has to be trained as a full-fledged lawyer to do piece of the action. Like, it's required, I think, since statehood that the guardian ad litem in Wisconsin be a lawyer. Do you view that as a due process issue that the guardian ad litem need not be a lawyer in your system?
I don't view that as a impediment. I actually look at it as being a blessing in some cases because these individuals really are truly looking out for the best interest of the children and for the community. The guardian ad litem that we have are respected community members. They do a thorough investigation and they come back with well-reasoned reports. And I have no concern with the ones that aren't law trained.
Did they visit with the child? Or
yes.
The individual? Required under your rules?
Correct.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
May I ask a question? Is there anyone from the Oneida tribe besides you who will be speaking to the kind of things that the immediately preceding witness talked about?
Well, Chairwoman Danforth is going to talk today, and she's in a better position than myself to talk about what had happened politically, especially what led up to the change of the judicial system.
Well, we have Nona Danforth. We have Sherry Danforth. I don't know which side he's on.
We have Christina, who is correct. The Oneida tribal chairman. So, and she will speak to us, too.
And what about Kathy Metoxin?
She's
an Oneida tribal member, but not a judicial officer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we do have several people from Oneida.
Correct.
Scheduled.
Well, thank you, and I'm glad I don't have to sit that down in this chair.
Well, we have extra big chairs in you need.
Okay. The next person is Judge Eugene Whitefish. He is the president of the Tribal Judges Association, and I know from personal experience he was involved way back in 1996 in the planning committee when we first started talking about setting up a state court, tribal court forum. Judge Whitefish?
Good afternoon, Chief Justice, as well as the justices. Chief Justice Rogensack, you make us look back to realize how old we're really getting.
I know.
I've been before you before. I know all of you justices, and I greet you well. What I basically said is who I am in my culture and where I come from. And one of the things, I've been a chief judge now for Forest County, Potawatomi for over 21 years. I was just reelected to the president of the Wisconsin Tribal Judges. So what I'm going to be addressing basically some points that the Wisconsin Tribal Judges put forth in their comments, as well as Potawatomi. So I'm going to try to combine them in the quick 5 minutes that you have given me. I'm going to try to talk as quick as I can.
My recollection is that weren't you also the president of the National Tribal Judges Association?
Yes, I was the president of the National American Indian Court Judges Association for 8 years. I hold the second longest term as being a judge in Niger for that period of time. They had asked me to come back, and I told them I've had my moment of glory, thank you, as well as a moment of work.
Right.
I've been involved with the Wisconsin Tribal Judges since I was elected, and this is one time that I want to look forward to. You look up to this picture up here to our right that Judge Abrahamson had explained to me at one of the first times that I came here to visit the Supreme Court. And if you look upon that, you're going to find a lot of the things in what we all deal with and what some of the three C's that I have looked forward to all my life. And that's communication, cooperation, and collaboration. And then you exactly see that there. And if you look around most of this room, you're going to see it in this room as well as I stand before you now, because I ask for the same thing to be looked upon. Because if we look upon this as Wisconsin Tribal Judges has looked upon it, there's over 40-some judges involved in Wisconsin Tribal Judges from the 11 sovereign nations in the state of Wisconsin alone. Now, for those 11 sovereign nations to come together, including Wisconsin, to come together to agree upon a rule has already made history. For if you look at the history of our native people in 11 sovereign nations and even the state of Wisconsin, there hardly is anything that we have ever sat down and agreed totally upon. That's the reason I say we have made history with this rule, not only for the people, but for the non-tribal people, and especially for the children involved, to apply justice to protect those children when it comes to child support, when it comes to things involving the court. We look at the things that this rule has brought forth. One of the things of Wisconsin is our logo is to move forward. Wisconsin is looked upon throughout the nation, the United States, as a leader when it comes to state and tribal forums, such as we heard two judges before us stand. It's evident when one of the judges from the state court come in and actually then as a judge in tribal court. He alone has made history. But he has also brought education to us judges in tribal court as well. But he also helped apply justice so everything is done in a fair and every possible way that we can in tribal courts. Yes, tribal courts across this country is new. But all judges in the state of Wisconsin and throughout the United States have taught us well. And the Supreme Court as well. What I say, when we say move forward in the state of Wisconsin, that's exactly what we look to move forward. And this rule has moved a lot of things forward in tribal courts and as we stand before you today and asking for a rule to continue. We not ask that for our courts, we ask that for our people and for the people, even though they maybe are not citizens of our tribes. They will still be treated with fairness, with respect, and with dignity. For that is the teachings of our people. And when they stand before you, to treat them in that manner. And isn't that what justice is all about? And the fairness of this rule, I don't see anything more fair than this rule that has been applied. And I thank each and every one of you for your efforts and your work that you have put forth for my people, for this rule to continue. If you take a look at it down to child support, I have to disagree with Connie of the cases in child support that Potawatomi has worked with. Only 23 cases. Potawatomi has a different rule. No one can order child support from our tribal members except our tribal court, period. So a lot of the counties now are understanding they can't set the child support because it has to go through their court. So now they tell them, you go to Forest County Potawatomi Child Support, and you go there because that's an appropriate venue for you to be heard. And there's non-tribal people that willingly call our child support office and just put on the calendar immediately. And we look to it when, when Judge Moore a long time ago had said, we're going to bring this forth. He had already implemented some of that by talking to us judges and what we could do for the people. And for the citizens of Wisconsin. That old saying of no child left behind, that's exactly what our tribe does. We don't leave a child out there where the father has making money or the mother is making money and leave that child without any. We have Potawatomi has a tribal income, but yet I take that income right off of the top. They got child support, I take that right off the top. They never see that money. Therefore, they will never be in a hole. Forest County, Potawatomi. I will never have to offer a contempt unless they're not following the work search. Yes, some fathers and mothers are not happy. But we know their children are taken care of. We're in Potawatomi country and a lot of our other native countries, we believe that to take care of our children, our elders are important, and that's what we're taught. And we're taught at a young age that justice, you treat everybody fairly. That's where I come with respect, dignity. Because that's what I was taught as a young child, and as a judge, that's what I apply from the bench. Yes, I am not law trained. Unless you consider people like this, trainers, that's been on the bench for how many years, that have trained me, have given me the wisdom that I need to have when I sit on the bench for my people, and for you and for the people that stand before me that are not tribal members. And we look to that. Collaboration, communication, and cooperation. And isn't that what we're standing here before you now asking for again? For justice for our people, no matter what color they may be. For we say of justice to be handled, there has no distinction upon color, race, or anything else. That our job is to carry out justice, and that's exactly what this rule has been able to do for all of us. I look at this rule and I've seen it as benefited. Now, if we look back to the Wisconsin tribal judges, there hasn't been one tribal judge that works with Rule 801 that has disagreed when I brought it forth to him as the president of Wisconsin tribal judges. Not one. Not one of us judges that are working with it has disagreed with it. Not one. For everyone, when we knew this was coming forth, Wisconsin tribal judges, I didn't put this together. The whole group of Wisconsin tribal judges formed together, and they're the one that offered their comments. And we just put it together, what they had said. But not one disagreement had come in with Rule 801. Not one.
We've had either a request to modify or to do something with 801 by one of the people who petitioned on the petitions we're hearing today, and you were here this morning, so you know the matter of which I speak. Would you have an objection to our modifying the rule so that matters that are filed first in tribal court would have the opportunity simply to file a motion in circuit court to have that filing reviewed? Right now, if it's filed first in circuit court, the statute provides an opportunity for review. But if it's filed first in tribal court, the statute is silent. Would you object to a modification like that?
I've actually had a case where it was filed in circuit court and then filed in my court. And I asked, where do you want to go? And they asked me, well, what's our choices? And I tell you, you can either have it heard in state court or tribal court, whichever you prefer. But let me know. And if one of you disagree with having it in tribal court, and both of you want to have it in state court, I have no disagreement with letting it be heard in state court. That is their wish, because I have full faith that state court will apply the justice as I would.
Okay, so in answer to my question, you wouldn't object to a modification that would permit that. Okay, thank you.
Chief Judge Whitefish, I wanted to state that all my comments about the work of the tribal forum, state tribal court forum, that I spoke of with Chief Judge Nielsen applies, of course, to all the tribal judges who have worked very hard to make the tribal forum work well for both the tribal courts and the state courts. And you have been a leader of this for a long, long time. In that leadership of you and the state court judges, including Judge Moore, of course, have paid dividends. And I know that you have traveled this country and talked about the Wisconsin experience and have influenced many states. And as a result of your efforts, we were able to put on the Walking on Common Ground with federal funds. And that was very successful for all the judges who and others who attended. So I wanted to express the court's thanks to you for your efforts.
Thank you very much.
And my question is that my recollection is that the National Judicial College in Reno has programs of continuing judicial education relating to tribal courts and issues. Is that still continuing?
It is. In fact, speaking for the Wisconsin Tribal Judges Association, most of the judges of the court systems of the 11th sovereign nation uses the National Judicial College quite often. I have an associate judge that was just elected a little over a year ago now, and they're still going through the National Judicial College. And even me, that's been on the bench for a while. I mean, I've proven that old saying that you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I've proven that wrong, because I've learned some new tricks over the years, all right? And I still continue to go to National Judicial College. So, I mean, a lot of the tribes, those 11 sovereign nations within the state of Wisconsin, they utilize the National Judicial College. So, I mean, it's quite well utilized. And very good, and a very good teaching school.
Judge, I didn't quite understand some of your first remarks. I understood you to say something about members of the Potawatomi tribe cannot be held responsible for child support other than in your court. Is that what you said?
No, let me clarify that. Another court cannot order from their per capita monies. The only one that can order from their per capita monies or our tribal income is the Forest County Potawatomi Tribal Court. In other words, we're very fortunate. We get a tribal income from the tribe, from our gaming revenue. And no one else but our tribal court can assess any child support or anything from that except our tribal court judges.
All right.
It's like allocation of tax refunds under the statute. Go to child support, blah, 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 before somebody gets it. And this relates to your per capita annual distribution.
And before that, if a member of Forest County Potawatomi has a child or more than one children, right away they file it with our child support. It comes before our court. And the money that the tribal member gets, they don't even see what money is owed to them. I take it right off the top before that check goes out. That's the reason I said I'll guarantee there will be no Forest County Potawatomi tribal member behind on child support.
All right. Let's say a Vilas County Circuit Court. Can they take other income than that specific payment?
Pardon?
Can they order child support from something other than the payment that is made by the tribe?
Yes, they can. If they're working, they will still also be assessed for their whatever job they have.
Okay.
Plus the tribal income that they have.
And surely you must have members of the tribe who don't even live in Wisconsin.
Pardon?
You have tribal members who don't even live in Wisconsin anymore.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But if they got children out there, I still take it. Because the income, their tribal income is generated from the tribe. So if they have a child out in Florida, and that mother or even father calls up and says, I have a child with this, and it's proven that child is them, adjudicated the father or the mother, then right away we'll take the income right off the top. I don't care if they live in Florida.
Do the parties have to come back to your court physically?
Not if they're not going to object to it. If they want to object to it, they have 20 days. Let's say a county files it, then they have 20 days. Once we get it, we send out notice, and they have 20 days in order to object to it. But a lot of times, the objection there isn't any objection because they know they're going to get their money from the tribal court.
Thank you. Thank
like
you.
A garnishment action for employment in your court on payments you make.
The sovereignty, the reason they implement it is because of the sovereignty of the tribe. That sovereignty, you notice I talked about this 11 sovereign nations, and that's all the size of Wisconsin. That's the sovereignty to be able to make our own rules and hear our own cases. That's the extent of our sovereignty in our tribe. We wanted to be able to handle our own cases in our courts. So that's the reason a lot of that was implemented. We still recognize a foreign order. We'll still recognize a foreign order because we have that in the state of Wisconsin. As long as we recognize the state of Wisconsin, they will recognize ours because that's what it says in the law.
Let me ask this. You represent all the tribes, but especially Potawatomi. We've heard from Oneida. Is there anything this court should be thinking about when we consider the Menominee tribe? Are the procedures...
When you consider what?
Menominee. Is there something different about them that we should be thinking about?
Yes, Menominee is a non-public 280. They don't belong to a public 280. I imagine Chief Justice is here.
Yes, she is.
To speak about Menominee, I would defer to her because she's an expert on that. I deal with public law 280.
They aren't.
So I stay completely away from her jurisdiction, all right? I don't even drive through there.
Okay, good. Flyover country. That's right. Flyover country. Okay. Are you willing, Justice Prosser, to wait then a little bit longer?
I'm done.
All right. Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Judge.
Thank you.
Okay, next on the hip parade. Put my glasses on so I can read it.
Douglas Hook. Is he with us? He is. Very good. Thank you.
My name is Douglas Hook. I'm the Vice President of the Stockbridge-Muncie community in Shawnee County, Wisconsin. I'm so glad to be here today. This has been a really interesting day. I'm going to talk about three things. One, I'm going to touch on some of the procedural things that the court has in place. I'm not an expert on it, but I'm familiar enough. Two, I want to talk about a case that occurred prior to 80154 and prior to Teague. And finally, I want to talk about Title 4D and how that's working in Stockbridge-Muncie. Some of the good questions regarding courts, what does the court have? And, you know, Stockbridge has had a tribal court code since, I believe, 1996. There's many, many aspects to the code that we're all familiar with, filing complaints, answers, discovery, interrogatories, due process, right to be heard. Our judges are, we have two judges. One is law trained. They are appointed by the tribal council, but then they're confirmed by the tribal membership through a yes or no vote. And interestingly enough, and the timing on this hearing today is outstanding because we're actually considering revisions to Chapter 1, a number of revisions. That's our tribal court code. And, you know, what I'm hearing today, not falling on deaf ears, some of this will be brought back, and we'll be looking at some of those things as we go through our revisions. I want to talk about a case that occurred that I'm familiar with. It was a probate case before, this is several years ago. Court was up and running, but, you know, obviously long before 805-41. And it involved a tribal member who passed away, had a home on the reservation, on trust land, and the family, for whatever reason, took it into Shawnee County Court. And Judge Grover pretty early recognized that he probably had a jurisdictional problem with that. Deciding the trust land issue, property question. And he had wanted to get it out to the tribal court, but he legally couldn't figure out a way to do it. So he really had no alternative, he felt, but to dismiss the case with the goal that the court or the family would take it into tribal court. For reasons that I'm not aware of, the family did not. It just sat for, you know, a couple, 3 years. Eventually, they did get it into tribal court to get it resolved, but, you know, as time goes by, 2-3 years, memories fade, some of the documents weren't there. It was a very, in the small community, it was a very emotional sort of probate matter. And, you know, it could have been resolved probably, you know, I think about if we had the procedures that are in place today for transfer, would we have ended up with a different result? Probably, right? Let me talk about children just a little bit. We have a number of laws on our book that address family. Indian child welfare, divorce, paternity, child support. You know, we feel that we have a moral and legal obligation over our tribal children. Stockbridge is relatively new to the Title 4D program. Got approved about 2 years ago and worked out the MOUs with the state and county. And in January, finally started getting some of the cases transferred into to tribal court. As of Friday, 122 cases have come from Shawnee County Court into the Stockbridge-Muncie Tribal Court. There's approximately 50 more to go, and I've been told that we expect to kind of see those wrap up in the next 2 to 3 months. Now, as we all know, there's a notice that's provided, and, you know, are any of contested, and yes, in Shawnee County, there have been approximately 15 to 20 that have been contested to transfer into tribal court. And of those, nine have been denied transfer. So, you know, we think everything is working, and it's working as it's supposed to work. And I've talked with our attorney who handles this. I've talked with their staff, talked with our court. There's not one who thinks that it's broke or it needs to be fixed. So I thank you for your time. I appreciate being here. Thank you.
Thank you. Robert McCoy.
Good afternoon, Justices. I'm Bob McCoy. I'm here on behalf of the Indian Law Section of the State Bar Association. And the section submitted some comments, which are in the record. Those were adopted by the State Bar Association's Board of Governors. And the basis of these comments boils down to this rule, as it has existed for a number of years, has facilitated cooperation and consistency in an area where there is no absolute bright line answer as far as the law is concerned. That's why it's a discretionary transfer rule. It's worked very well. And the practitioners, as a general matter in this state, have accepted and confirmed that in the position paper with this court. It's also facilitated the sharing of costs and revenues between some of the state courts, the tribal courts, which, of course, in today's budgetary era is important for everybody. That was one of the purposes of the rule, and it's done that. So these are things that's happened because of the existing rules and why the section and the Board of Governors has said that the rule is working and should be continued. And I've heard about the modifications. I haven't heard anything discussed in the way of a modification today that would not be consistent with the continuation of the rule. And we certainly hope that that happens. I wanted to make three comments on Indian law, where 40 years ago I started in Indian law, and I was asked back then to write the chapter, or should I say rewrite the chapter, on tribal sovereignty in what was then the only treatise on Indian law, and that's the Federal Handbook of Indian Law. Back then it was called the Felix Cohen Handbook because he was the original author. So we did a revision of that, which was published in 1982. And in working on that, there's a couple of things about Indian law I wanted to share in light of some of the comments I've heard today. First of all, since I did that work, there hasn't been a lot of significant changes in regards to the area of civil jurisdiction of the tribal courts. What has happened is the tribal courts, which had minimal existence back at that time, have become much more the equivalent of the court systems that we've been accustomed to in the state and the federal court systems. Why is that? Because of the continued interaction of the tribes, whether on a business level because of Indian gaming or because of the movement of tribal members back and forth off the reservations for economic or other purposes. So tribal courts have matured. That's the main difference, and that's what this rule is intended to deal with. There is still no bright line, and there was not back then, about the civil jurisdiction of the tribal courts. We'd all struggle with that. There's no absolute answer. First point I want to make is that the rule is consistent with the general federal Indian law principle about the civil jurisdiction of the tribal courts in the first instance. In the first instance, right or wrong, the test in the leading circuit in the United States, which would be the Ninth Circuit where they got most of the tribes, that test is that there be a colorable basis for tribal court jurisdiction. The rule in Wisconsin is very consistent with that. In fact, it exceeds that standard because of the multitude of factors that are set forth in the rules, certainly established when there's a finding of tribal court jurisdiction, a discretionary finding, that there is certainly, consistent with federal Indian law and exceeding it, a colorable claim of jurisdiction of the tribal court. That's number one. Number two is that if there is a problem with tribal court jurisdiction, either because a state court judge erred in transferring the case discretionarily, or the tribal court erred, second layer of protection, in taking jurisdiction, there's still another layer of protection, and that is in the federal court system. The tribal court jurisdiction is reviewable. So that can be reviewed. And that's going on right now in a case in the United States Supreme Court. See my lights on, I'll be done in 1 minute. That's the Dollar General case. That's not going to solve all the problems.
It again. So, Dollar General.
What's the name?
That's going on right now. Another review of a tribal court jurisdiction.
The name of the case is?
The name of the case is Dollar General.
Dollar General.
Right, right. You can pick it up real quick. It's been the subject of about 45 amicus briefs,
okay.
Many of which are not as good as the past dissents on this rule, I would say.
Okay.
But they raise the exact same issues. And there's not going to be an answer from that case. It's got a specific set of facts, but it will provide a guideline that the tribal courts will have for their jurisdiction, and the state court judges will be applying in these discretionary factors.
Has oral argument been held on that yet, do you know?
No, it's actually, I think, my sister sent it to me the other day. Her organization coordinates the briefing on these Supreme Court Indian law cases. But I think it's December 9th,
okay.
Very soon.
Good,
and decisions expected in June, you know, at the end of the term for the Supreme Court. So, but it's not going to answer anything. And it's not going to be, the result's not going to change the value of this discretionary transfer rule. All it's going to do is add some more input in terms of the decision-making that has to come about. It concerns not only jurisdiction over non-Indians, but jurisdiction over types of actions. So, both. But it's again, it's not going to answer everything. So, on the final point about Indian law, if a tribal official acts outside the scope of somebody's civil liberties, that term, because the law is still developing in this. But there's certainly jurisdiction, again, in the federal courts. You can't sue the tribe, but you can sue the individual tribal official or whoever it is. Let's say somebody comes in and doesn't have a basis for why they made a certain determination on trial custody or whatever it might be, a tribal official. That decision can be reviewed under the traditional standard now of Ex parte Young, and that's the same law about the enjoining of the actions of federal or state officials who have acted outside the scope of their a person's individual rights or their legal authority. So you have these protections as a matter of federal Indian law, and the purpose of this law, which has worked quite well ever since the original concerns, legitimate concerns, were expressed, to resolve those by the discretionary factors. Thank you
very much.
May I ask a question? If there is a problem in a tribal court, you say that there is a remedy in United States District Court.
For most instances, yes.
Now, it is no small matter to take a case to United States District Court. You have to have money. Is there any organization that is prepared in the whole country that is prepared to help someone who claims there have been improprieties in a tribal court?
I would say that if there has been serious improprieties, the answer to that is yes. I mean, we have organizations like, whether it's the American Civil Liberties Union or other organizations that people can go to. I think as a practical matter, not every injustice in any court is something that you can get a remedy for. But the same availability of someone who has had mistreatment, they believe, in a state court or federal court is available as far as the tribal court system is concerned. And additional issues can be raised there about, the jurisdiction of the tribal courts.
Is there any organization that specializes in focusing on tribal courts?
I can't say on a broad level. I know there are organizations in certain states. I think, you know, in Wisconsin, you have Wisconsin Judicare that does assist persons who are indigent in tribal court matters, and that's based up in Wausau. So that would be an example here in this state.
But there's a national organization that watch for and represent Indian rights.
Yes.
And they might take this kind of case or might not, because they can't afford to take every single case.
Exactly. Right.
And I'm sorry that I can't bring up from my memory the name of the organization, but I can't remember if it was New Mexico or Colorado.
American Rights Fund.
Exactly.
Right.
NARF. And that's the equivalent to a number of organizations that represent different people.
Yes.
Specialize in it.
Right.
And that's the one I was thinking, where is it located?
Located in Boulder. That's where my sister's at. So I know it well.
Got a secret weapon in your sister.
Well, she helps me.
That's what a sister does.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
I could tell a few more stories, but that's not for here.
Thank you.
We're gonna move on so that we can. Well, we have tons of other people that we want to have a moment to be able to speak.
Does he have something else that you really want to say?
I can only say that, as I say, speaking for the section and the board, the governors joining us, that the importance of having a discretionary rule like this. And that Wisconsin being definitely a leader in the whole United States, that I know my sister's own organization, is important. And that sets a precedent that goes beyond the boundaries of the state of Wisconsin. For all judges, tribal and non-tribal.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Nona Danforth.
Hi, I'm Nona. I'm a Idaho tribal member. I apologize. I do not like giving out speeches. I also apologize if I start crying. It's really emotional for me. Exactly 4 years to this day, I went to our Oneida Tribal Court, and I've been dealing with them since day one. I have been having proof of abuse and neglect. I'm speaking on behalf of my son and myself. I've been threatened by these judges, telling that I can no longer bring briefs in. I've also been told. I've been harassed by these guys. I would go to the store and they would follow me. They also would have harassed me at my last job. So I ended up at the Child Protection Board. They had proof of abuse and neglect. So I ended up having to hide away in a hotel for a weekend. Months later, I am getting a call from the judges themselves. And they had a meeting that them together, they also saw abuse and neglect, and they told me to go hide away again for a weekend at a hotel. And because of listening to them, they put me under contempt. But our child support agency, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I have to go through a secret door every time I go there. I shouldn't have to do that. I've never to this day have met my caseworker. I don't know who it is. I don't even know who to contact. Every time I try to contact someone, there's someone that's related to the other side of the party. I don't know where to go. What I'm trying to ask for today is a way of how do I get out of this? I don't know where or who to turn to. I've been everywhere. I'm just asking a way of how am I supposed to go back to this court system if I happen to have to go back? Look what they've done to me and my son already. And after fighting this and coming here today, what else can happen? What else are they going to do to me and my son? They've already threatened to take him away from me, and I've done nothing wrong. I feel like my right as a mother is to protect my son, and they took that away from me. I'm just asking if there's some way I can get out of this tribal court to be heard of an actual judge who is qualified to hear my case and for my son's voice to be heard so we can protect this little boy and other little kids who are being abused to this day who are still being put through this. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ma'am? You heard we had a witness in Judge Robert Collins. Have you dealt with him?
You think after what I've been through, do you think I'm going to have the faith, the trust to go back in there again?
Have you ever given Judge Collins a chance to?
I'm afraid that they did this to me last time. If I'm in there, I'm stuck in there, and I'm stuck in there no matter what. No matter where, I'm stuck. If I'm trying to get my job back that I had to leave, I was fired because of all the health problems I had to deal with the past 4 years. If I want to fight that, I go see these judges again. If I want to go back to school, which I want to, I have to go see these judges again. I'm screwed no matter where I go. I'm stuck.
Have you tried going to the state court?
I tried everything. They said I can't go. Oneida has to give me the permission to leave the court to go somewhere else.
So you tried to file a motion in state court, and they said, no, they won't take you because you didn't have permission from the Oneida court?
Yes.
Did a state trial judge say that to you?
Yes.
Do you have a paper record of all of that?
Yes, I do.
What's the case name?
Pardon me? Perhaps you can send a copy in with a written comment. That might be helpful to us. Okay. Then we can understand that because obviously it's hard for at least me to understand that when the statute doesn't sit, when 801-54 does not say anything about the trial court. So the trial court may have issued an order. And you may not be happy with it, but to us it may mean something else, and to you it may mean something else. If you can, I don't know if it's an open public record, but if you are willing to send it, that might be helpful. And if you don't want it public, you should just state in your letter that you're sending it, but it's confidential and you'd like the court to keep it confidential.
Can I just ask a quick question, trying to figure this out a little bit. When you went to the state court, what county was that in?
Brown County.
Okay. And did you pay a fee to the clerk there to open a file?
They wouldn't let me.
They wouldn't take your fee?
No.
The clerk wouldn't?
Yeah.
So, when you say the judge denied you being there, did you see a judge, or do you mean the clerk wouldn't let you open a file to begin with?
The clerk wouldn't let me in the beginning.
Okay.
Did you get a piece of paper from the clerk or anything that said it?
Okay, so that's why you don't have a case name or a case file number, because you couldn't pay your fee to file it. Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to figure out. So
Okay. You never were before a judge.
No. So what do you remember what kind of case, or if anyone was helping you file your case? Was it a family case? Was it a
custody case?
Okay, so you were trying to file a case concerning custody for your child. And are there any organizations in Brown County that help people? Some communities have organizations that help abuse victims and things like that. And they help walk them through how you file things.
I had a number of people that came to my house. And they had agreed as well that there was definitely proof of neglect and abuse. But because of that court, so my court, they don't listen to them. They have no jurisdiction. There was nothing I could do.
I mean, my question is a little bit different. I'm just trying to figure it out. I was a judge in Washington County, so I'm just going by what I knew from being a trial court judge there. There were some domestic abuse agencies and people that sometimes would help walk people through the court system. Now, they weren't tribal members, okay? But they were, you know, people who were victims who needed help. They didn't know where to go, what to file, how to get the paperwork done. And so they'd go to these agencies that would help them kind of get everything in order so they could file their case with the clerk, and then the clerk would take it. And so I'm trying to figure out, is there anyone like that in Brown County that does that sort of thing that you're aware of? I mean, did you have any help when you went there?
No.
That's all I was trying to figure out, because no. I'm trying to connect the dots here and figure out what happened in your instance?
When you went to the clerk's office, did you have a piece of paper that you wanted to give the clerk?
No.
No, you just had a question or a comment. Mm-hmm. And the clerk said they were not going to do that.
So you told, what did you tell the clerk when you went there? You said you wanted to file an action in Brown County to get out of the tribal court, or just you wanted to file it in Brown County?
I wanted to file it. I even had a lawyer. I've gone to like 3 different lawyers. Even I had lawyers who try sending and stuff. They get denied every time.
And they couldn't do it either?
No.
And were they all stopped at the clerk's office?
I'm not too aware.
Well, maybe you can get those documents from the lawyers and send them to us so we can have a sense of what happened or didn't happen. Helpful, but again, you should, if you want, label them and let us tell the court if you want them confidential or not.
Thank you very much.
It's very hard to come in here. It's a very impressive room, and the podium is hard, and then 7 of us sitting here in black robes. You did a very good job, Ms. Stanford.
The next person, Candace Danforth, be in the courtroom today.
Candace Danforth and Carrie Danforth are husband and wife, and they are the parents of Nona Danforth. They were not able to be here today. They had circumstances that kept them.
Okay, so I should take off Candace and Carrie off of my list. Okay,
yes,
thank you for letting me know.
The parents of Nona Danforth, is that what you said?
Mm-hmm. Right. Kathy Metoxin. Kathy, thank you.
Good afternoon. It is scary to be here. I've never experienced this before.
I've been there, so I know. Actually, we're all very friendly, so you should be okay.
I'm going to do the best I can. I have a whole bunch of notes here. I got a lot of things to say. I've experienced a lot. I've witnessed a lot. I've lived a lot over my approximately 27, 28 years of being politically active within my community and being emotionally, verbally, and physically abused within our system, within our structure. So it's very hard for me to stand here because I have to go home and live in a community that's very bullying and abusive. I'm going to speak first. I'm not going to talk about myself first. I want to respond to you about Nona. I want to tell you how I very first met Nona. I know her mother and father. I've known them since they were young. I never really met her. I've seen her when she was little. Linda Dallas was assisting her with some of her stuff. And she was having a really hard time. It's very hard to help someone when there is a child involved. And I learned a long time ago about honor, dignity, and respect. I'm a very spiritual person. I've been fortunate to travel for 30 years to learn our ways from the East. We come from the East. We're from the Iroquois Confederacy. And in our ways, when a child is touched in such a way, the person that does these harms to our children is banished. And that's what I've learned over the years because my children were abused too. When I met Nona, Buffy asked me to help her. She said she couldn't handle it anymore. And I understand that because I was in the same predicament with one of my children. And when I got to the house, it was on Sunday. And visitation rites end on Sunday about supper time, and they begin on Friday at lunchtime. And while we were there, her son, it was about a year and a half, I think, and she was holding him, and he was pulling away from her and jerking around and twisting backwards. And he would cry, and then he would laugh, and then he would hug her, and he would hold her, put his arms around her neck. And then he'd get fussy, and at one point, he leaned way back, and he slapped her as hard as he could. And it was like shocking. Oh, my God. And she said, that's how he comes home on Sundays. And then he was hugging and loving her. And then he put his hands around her neck and started trying to choke her. And he was throwing himself backwards and trying to choke her. And we were, like, ready to catch him. And it was really emotional for all of us. And one of the grandparents took him and was trying to bounce him. And he was just really upset. And they explained to me that he had just come home from his father's. So that was the first time I met Nona and her son. And they talked about the visitation. She was trying to get supervised visitation. And no one was helping her or listening to her or even wanted to see her.
Supervised visitation between the father and the child?
Yes. That,
okay. Thank you.
And she was documenting, and she went through the structure of the tribe, Indian Child Welfare Social Services. She was trying to get help. And they showed me the documentation, and it was very disturbing. It's very unfortunate that our children, there are children that are living these kinds of lives, you know, within our communities. And it was very hard for me because he was so little. And he was trying to slap her as hard as he could and choke her, and then he was crying, and then he was laughing, and then he was loving her. And you could tell there were, after I left and we were pulling away, I said, he's damaged. And I don't know if I can help you either. But it's been quite an ordeal, and we pulled together. There's a couple of us that have been working together for quite a few years, 25 years at least, and we've assisted tribal members, whether it's employment or housing issues or, you know, whatever comes along, we do the best we can because they can't find anyone to help. You know, when you're an ordinary layperson off the street, depending on who you are and who you know, and I've been saying this for close to 30 years, I've stood up in our general tribal council meetings, and I've said this many, many, many times. It depends on who you are and who you know. And that's when you'll get help. Or that's when someone will do something for you. And then there are those of us who have to struggle and hurt and get angry. You know, when 25 years of being beat up verbally and physically and emotionally, you end up, you know, being hard to communicate with. And so you get your times when you get emotional and you cry, and you get your times when you might want to chew somebody out. And I have, and I do, and I'm still active, and I still help people. And Nona's the reason why we're here, Nona and her son, and because of the injustice that was done to her family. I've seen her mother and her father both crying. I've seen her cry, her baby cry. I've seen them very emotional. I've witnessed them being confused, not understanding why isn't anyone listening, why isn't anyone trying, you know, to see us. She went through the whole system, I believe, the proper places. She tried to go before the business committee. I got a phone call from someone other than us. You need to get up to the business committee meeting because there's a dozen young women going up there about the child support and the child care and the placement and this. So I quick got ready and I went up to the BC meeting. And there was a half a dozen girls and they were trying to talk to our committee who, they sit like you. There's nine of them. And they didn't want to hear them. They said, you can't come here. You can't tell us these things. You shouldn't be here. You have to go back into the system. You need to go up the chain of command. You need to go through the process. And they were trying to say, we did. That's why we're here. There was girls that were crying and saying, I'm trying to tell you something. You know, they had documentation. They had stuff to show. And the two younger ones, they were telling them, you can't be here. And one of them is the very same, my nephew, Brandon Yellowbird Stevens, who made the motion at our General Tribal Council meeting. And he said in that General Tribal Council meeting, we met with the families. We resolved the issues. It's time to move forward. I make a motion to eliminate the agenda. And with 1,500 people or so, of course you're going to jump up with your first half-hour meeting and say, yeah. And they ended the meeting, and they never were afforded the opportunity to tell their story. And her father was there, and he was trying to speak. And it was very discouraging, very disappointing, shameful. And so I helped with the petition to bring them there. I helped. I signed my name to the document why we're here today. And I've experienced very similar things, I guess I'll say. I've been thrown on the floor by two police officers who knelt on my back and handcuffed me and took me to jail because I was asking to see the lead judicial officer, and the gentleman that didn't like me or whatever said, I'm not going to let you do that. So then I asked for, can I see the second one, who I know, Lee and him. And he said, I'm not going to let you do that either. And I said, well, I just seen him walk past the door. So I sat in a chair and I said, well, I'll just wait for him to come out then. He called the police on me and they came and there were two officers. I was asking for Brown County. I want Brown County because you both attacked me. You verbally attacked me and you tried to, he put his black gloves on and was going to grab me because I took a picture of him pointing in somebody's face. And I was taking pictures of him, and he came and charged me. And I put my phone down my shirt, and he wanted my camera. And he was going to attack me. And I said, you both have verbally attacked me. I know you don't like me. I want Brown County.
In order to focus back on the petition before us,
I'm sorry.
And I appreciate all your remarks. And I know they're heartfelt, and I know it's hard for you to do this. Nothing is more emotional than when children are involved. If there were a modification to the current rule so that whoever needs to know, be it the clerk's office or the circuit courts, that it is permissible for someone who has a matter lodged in a tribal court to file in circuit court, either because they filed in tribal court first or because they filed in tribal court second and there's some problem there, would that solve your problem? So that there would be a stated avenue in the rule that could be used for people who were in tribal court so that the circuit court would hear you regardless of whether there was permission given by the tribal court or not.
I don't know. if that would be the answer, because a lot of the people that are abusive and bullying are they're fixed up and set up throughout the tribe within our judiciary. I filed a sexual harassment complaint against one of the judges, and they just laughed about it and used it for gossip and never did anything about it.
Yeah, but I'm really just looking at our, you know, what we have before us is a Wisconsin statute, and we are under the petition that was filed here today. You know, Linda filed it, Linda Dallison told us about it, and that you are also involved with. The focus is to change a circuit court rule to make access, the way I understand it, easier for those who right now feel they don't have access to the circuit court for whatever reason. And so I guess what I'm saying to you is if the court were to modify the rule such that you would have access stated in the rule, so no one could say, as apparently was said to Nona, you can't file here, you can't come here, would that be a manner of beginning to address some of your concerns?
I don't know about any of the other tribes, but I don't know if it'll help us, but yes, it might. Okay. If the people, I don't know if the people were made aware of all these things, because, you know.
If we have a change in the rule, we will certainly have an education of anybody in the Wisconsin court system who is to deal with it.
I believe there's people that would utilize it and want to get out of the tribe.
Okay. You know, you make me think of, we have a committee that's a records management committee. We can deal with what circuit courts can do, right? And so a lot of times people go to court and they're what we call pro se. They're on their own trying to figure the system out.
Right.
And it's confusing for a lot of people. So sometimes there are forms that are developed so that someone can fill in the blanks and file that document and know that they have a form that a clerk knows what to do with it, right? Do you think having something like that would be of assistance for litigants in Ms. Danforth's position or in your position so that people would have a recognized piece of paper that the clerk would know what it means when it's filed in court?
I think it might help. Right now, it's hard because our leadership is changing our laws. And they're like one example that I think is dangerous is they're changing the language in some of our laws. They're changing shall to must or may. They, in place of shall, they're using must or the words may. And when I questioned it, the response that I got was it was because the younger people don't understand shall. There's younger people, you know, you don't change a law because somebody young doesn't understand the law or the word. That's just my opinion.
But that's tribal court.
But it's tribal.
Those are issues that I can't help you with, the shells and the maize in tribal court.
My point is those people are there, and they're just moving forward just viciously.
I'm just thinking out loud, trying to come up with ideas that might be productive and to let you know you're heard.
Yeah.
But
for the United Tribe of Indians of Wisconsin, there needs to be something in place for people.
What about if there's no legal aid society that can help? Perhaps the Brown County Bar Association can be asked to get volunteer lawyers.
I've been there.
Well, that's the question.
I've been there and I've done that, and they hide behind sovereignty. A lot of people are afraid of the sovereignty word, and it's kind of used to benefit a few.
So they don't want to get involved in the tribal court matter.
They're scared of that word.
Okay. Yeah. What about the concept that to really get access to justice, you need a lawyer, and you should be provided with a lawyer at county or state expense?
We're kind of like Linda said, she's seasoned. And we don't know where to go. So how do we? There's a lot of people that have been
trying to think of terms that you're dealing with a legal system, theoretically and as a matter of law, at least in the state courts, you have a constitutional right to represent yourself. Mm-hmm. The problem is you have a constitutional right to do a lot of things by yourself, but I haven't figured out how to fix my car yet. And so I need help, professional help.
Yeah.
And the question is how to provide professional help for people who are not represented, whether they be in tribal or in circuit court. And that's a bigger issue, but it's one you're facing. Mm-hmm. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm. My sense is, I don't know if Judge Robert Collins is still here, but there's probably someone who's involved in the system in Brown County that would know the specifics what's available in terms of legal assistance.
He's out beyond the foyer. He's not in the courtroom right now. Well, maybe we could ask the past president of the state bar, who's from Brown County, to help us figure out what's available in Brown County in terms of legal assistance to people, whether they're in tribal court or whether they're in circuit court. Maybe we should do that.
Those are good ideas. We do have to move on. We have a lot of other people that have signed up. Thank you so very much for coming. Trish Cruzan, are you here?
Chief Justice Rogensack and Justices, may it please the Court. Before I get into my prepared remarks, my very sunny prepared remarks, I'd like to acknowledge that clearly matters of internal tribal dispute as well as family court matters come with a lot of pain. I know that Justice Bradley and most likely Justice Gableman have the most recent experience with family court matters, and I want to acknowledge that before I move into my prepared remarks. They're very difficult things we go through. Buju Kiwase Ndijina Kaz Minawa Ozawa Makwa Ikwe Ndijina Kaz Wagush Ndudin. I introduce myself to you in Ojibwe and now English. I am Tish Kiana Cruzan. I am tribal, and I am the tribal child support attorney for the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians. In December 2012, I had the honor and privilege to be sworn in by Chief Justice Rogensack and then Chief Judges, Justice Abrahamson. And it was a special day for me and my family. And I just want to say you two were an inspirational team. I treasure that moment. Thank you so much for that. And I am pleased to be in front of both of you once again and full court for the first time.
You'll get the full court press then.
Well, believe me, I had the two superstars that day.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure I'm going to take judicial notice of that.
But you made your statement. I truly did. So, obviously, my comments are directly related to my experience with the 801.54 transfers. I've been with Red Cliff for just over a year, and my tenure began with our child support agency, our tribal child support agency, working with Bayfield County Child Support and Bayfield County Circuit Court prior to the start of case transfers. I know Justice Gableman's familiar with Judge John Anderson, who I've had the great pleasure of working with. I was previously the child support attorney for the Coteray Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians, working with Sawyer County Child Support Agency and the Sawyer County Court. So I have attended many, many transfer and contested hearings in the Bayfield County Circuit Court and Sawyer County Circuit Court. Within Sawyer County, before I attended hearings conducted by Judge Gerald Wright, there is now a new circuit court judge there, Judge John Yackel, with my colleague at Recruiter Ray. We have met with the judge. This has been a really interactive process. court agencies, and the circuit courts and the county child support agencies work together and meet together. The process is working. Your judges are doing good work, very good work. I have to say that in the 80-plus hearings that have transferred from cases that have transferred from Judge John from Bayfield County, Judge John Anderson has held hearings on transfers and in contested hearings. Just to give you some examples, some of those, I've attended some of the contested hearings. Well, all of them, pretty much. There haven't been that many. There were around four. And in a couple of those, we were there, the judge asked the person, you know, are you contesting the transfer? I said, yes. The judge said at the contested hearing, the individual in one case came up to me in the hallway afterward, and we chatted. He learned a few things about a Red Cliff Tribal Child Support Agency, and specifically not knowing that his order would transfer. So everything stays. You know, the order is in place. After speaking to me, with no undue pressure from me, just education, he withdrew his request to contest that transfer. We have other examples, and these are pretty cool stories. There was a discretionary transfer hearing recently where all of the parties were Red Cliff, and the judge chose not to transfer the case because, again, the discretionary aspect of the transfer rule. When he didn't transfer the case, Judge Anderson, the tribal member came to our agency and said, why didn't this transfer, and what's going on? And I talked him through some of the judge's reasons because I understood them. Again, discretionary transfer. And we had a great moment after that where we were able to talk to him, have that positive and have that opportunity to thank him for paying child support and, you know, thank him and ask and work with Bayfield County on those cases. And I see my light's red. Does anybody have any questions because I've been a part of these transfer hearings?
I do, counsel, and that is there's been a question raised here as to whether the tribal courts are giving the parties opportunity to object to the transfer. So I wanted to know, in your experience, are they getting notices that they have the opportunity to object, and are they given that opportunity for real?
Yes, for real, yes. Yes, in the parties are contacted 2 to 3 times before this even comes over. The tribal agency sends out a letter saying, hey, you know, there's somebody in this case that's a tribal member. Your cases may possibly be transferred. You'll be hearing from the county agency. The county agency then sends out a packet. And in that packet, it says, if you wish to object, you know, you have 10 days to file. Depending on the judge, for instance, Judge Anderson, he's chosen to hold a hearing in every single transfer. Judge Wright, in his courtroom, with the 200 and some transfers there, he would hold a hearing sometimes, but always, always, if someone objected. So they are given the opportunity and are contacted multiple times prior to that transfer.
For as long as you know? I mean, what date would you say that you know that they've been given the opportunity?
Well, clearly for Red Cliff, it would have been from day one. And my understanding is all the other tribes is this has been since these transfers began. That this is the process that's been in place.
You know, I get a lot of stuff. I shouldn't say a lot. But I get notices from Social Security. I get notices from Department of Revenue. I get notices from the Internal Revenue Service. And I'm a trained lawyer and a judge, and my husband, who is a PhD and was a professor at the university, says, what does this mean? I read it. It's gobbledygook. I don't understand a word it means a few times, frankly. I don't either. So the question I have is, based on your experience, the people get a packet and it may be terrific, but do they have the opportunity to read it? Do you have the sense that they can understand it?
Well, one of the things both Lakuta Ray and Redcliffe does is in the very initial contact, we put an FAQ letter, a frequently asked questions letter about what's going to come down, and invite people, please call us. If you have any questions about this process, give us a call. And we get calls, as does the county agency. It's a similar thing. Just as Abrahamson, there's nothing you can do if somebody won't read the materials and won't reach out.
I understand that.
But that's one of the reasons, for instance, I try to go to all the hearings or my colleagues within my office. Someone tries to be there so we can answer questions and provide that information.
Would it help if everybody had a lawyer?
I certainly wouldn't impose that burden on the circuit court, as in there's a lot of instances where lawyers aren't required for these types of things. In this instance, I believe that your judges are doing an excellent job with these discretionary transfers and working with the parties before them and asking them questions and going through the process with them. You have an excellent, excellent court out there.
Thank you very much. Go ahead, Justice.
This is Redcliffe. If a case, if a civil case starts in the Redcliffe Tribal Court, let's say A files the case. Is that sort of the procedure? One party files the case.
A civil case.
Okay. And B doesn't want to be there. We're not in circuit court. We're in tribal court. What happens in Redcliffe?
I'm wondering, where is B from? Is B a tribal member who resides within the boundaries of the reservation, and then in which case it's very similar to a county where you can't go to the county court and say, I don't want to be here, I guess, unless you're... I'm confused about it. It's very specific.
Well, let's say B is a member of a different tribe or a non-Native American.
And doesn't reside on the reservation.
I want to know what happens if somebody doesn't want to be there.
Well, I think it would be very case specific. If they reside within the boundaries of the reservation, and I'm looking to the gentleman that's coming after me, which is Attorney Stenzel, who I think would probably be in a better position to answer specifics on something like that. So I'm, if it's okay with you, just a crosser, I think I punt to Attorney Stenzel on that one.
Is he prepared to receive?
Well, he's next up to bat, so why don't we see what he has to say.
All right.
And see. Okay. Paul Stenzel. And thank you very much for appearing.
All right. May it please the court. Thank you, Your Honors. Glad to be here. So to pick up right away, what I would say is if B doesn't want to be there, without knowing any more, B has to file a motion saying I want it dismissed or whatever defenses they want to assert to get out of the forum that they're in, just as anybody would do here or in most courts.
Yeah. Okay, so he loses on that. Says, one, you don't have jurisdiction because I am a this, that, or other thing. Or two, he says, you have jurisdiction over me, but so does the circuit court, and I would prefer to be there. So, I mean, those are two instances, right?
Right, so if he loses, he can appeal, presumably, to the Redcliffe Court of Appeals. He could also go to Bayfield County Circuit Court, institute an action, provoke a Teague situation, if he even wants to be in court at all. I mean, maybe he just wants to get out. He doesn't want to go be a plaintiff somewhere else. It depends on what you mean by he doesn't want to be there. Most defendants don't want to be there, right? They're finding a way to get out of the case. Do you mean get out of the case, or they don't want to be in tribal court?
Let's just take this hypothetical. A is a member of the Redcliffe tribe. V is not a member of the Red Cliff Tribe. They live in Superior. Okay, and A comes to the tribal court and files for divorce. Okay, and B says, I either want to be in the local county or I want to be in Douglas County. What county is that? I'm trying to remember.
Bayfield County.
Bayfield, of course.
I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, they file the motion, and then what?
Well, I guess the first thing would be, you know, whatever Red Cliff divorce laws say about their residency requirements and their jurisdictional requirements is the first place that the tribal court judge would start. You know, and I don't know. I don't even know for sure if Red Cliff does divorce or not. But that would be a little bit unusual, though, right? I mean, people from Iowa don't often come to Wisconsin to get a divorce, and if they do, they have to meet the residency requirement, et cetera, et cetera. So seems that, you know, barring kind of the unusual Red Cliff tribal court code or tribal divorce code, they're probably not going to meet the jurisdictional requirements, but it just depends on what the Red Cliff code says. That's the first place to start.
So they object to the, he objects to the jurisdiction in the Red Cliff code for whatever reason. Wasn't served right, no jurisdiction over him, no law. Okay. And the court says, you're wrong. The tribal court says, you're wrong, and we're going ahead with this. Okay. What does he do? What does B do?
Well, I suppose it depends on how aggressive B wants to be, but...
He wants to be aggressive.
I suppose he can, one thing, and I'm just lawyering here on the fly, okay? He can do an interlocutory appeal to the Red Cliff Tribal Court of Appeals.
Go up the
That'd be one thing he could do. He could probably file some kind of federal court action challenging tribal court jurisdiction because tribal court jurisdiction is a federal question. However, under federal law, there's an exhaustion doctrine that's very firmly in place for tribal courts, and I suspect in that situation you've given me, the federal court would say you need to litigate all the way through. I don't know for sure, but they might. And I suppose
steps is probably all there is.
And then if they wanted to maybe try and get into state court, I suppose, again, the could file, and that's happened. There's cases like that where the two filed in divorce in different places. There was one out in New York, actually, where they cited the T case. It got into federal court. The battling, it was in federal court, and they were battling over whether they were going to be in tribal or state court. So it can get complicated fast. But
so you either go up the tribal court and get a ruling on the jurisdiction or whatever, or you go into federal court and get a ruling after you've exhausted, depending on what that is, or you go to state court and say, I want to be here. And then you've got an action in two different courts and maybe three different courts.
Which it's actually kind of ironic when you think about it, because I think I'm guessing some of you are thinking, gee, that seems like a lot. And I'm looking at it and thinking, you know, if you're in state court and you're a respondent, you're in state court pretty much. I mean, you don't get to go around as easily as that. I mean, unless you have an unusual geographic situation.
And you might go to federal court.
You might, but
right.
I mean,
Justice Prosser, did you get an answer to your question? Because you were the one that started his question.
It seems to me it's a lot easier to move from circuit court into tribal court than it is to move from tribal court into circuit court. It seems to me that can happen. I'm not one here saying this system is not working at all. But I'm not saying that. But I am saying there apparently are some people who do not want to be in tribal court. And I'm not really seeing a nice, clear way to get out of tribal court.
Well, let me speak to that, because that's kind of the first point I have. I've been taking notes all day, and I have all these stickies. And I want to talk about that, because there's been a lot of discussion about, well, what about transferring back from tribal court to state court?
How about not transferring back? How about transferring when it was never filed in circuit court?
So those are the two categories, really. And that's one thing I was going to say. So you got to break it into two categories. One is originally filed in tribal court. And there, I think what we all need to be mindful of is that If that case is filed in tribal court first, the tribal court or the tribe is going to be the one first that's going to make some kind of rule or law about whether and under what circumstances they're going to authorize transfers, just as the state of Wisconsin has made a rule for their courts. So that's something that I think we should all kind of proceed with caution, because I think probably the different tribes are going to have different views on that. And just talking to some of the tribal judges even today, there's some that are doing it and some that aren't. And so just we have to be aware there's 11 different views, like, possibly on that. Maybe not all different. But
you are what I would consider an expert on Indian law, and that's what your law review article says also. So I believe it.
I won't disagree.
Stay with this issue, because it seems as though there's been discussion about it that some on the court might be interested in. So I don't want you, since we've got you here, I don't want you to just superficially mention what you did, not that I need to be pejorative on that, and then go on to the next point. What are the strengths or weaknesses with regard to this issue of originally filed in the tribal court? You've mentioned that we have to be mindful that the tribal court then has jurisdiction, and that there are 11 tribes, different sovereigns that would have perhaps different rules on it. But is there anything else we should be mindful of? And is there any legal authority that you can point us to that we should be considering?
I'm thinking carefully here. I'm not worried about the legal part of it, in the sense that Public Law 280 pretty clearly grants the state of Wisconsin civil adjudicatory jurisdiction. And so, assuming that we're talking about family cases, probate, those types of things, I don't think there's going to be a legal issue. I think the issue, as it has been with a lot of these things, is kind of the communication and the mechanics and being sensitive to the litigants more than a black letter law issue. I mean, that's just off the cuff.
In a way, what I hear you say is it's kind of like if you are in a car accident and someone could file a suit in any number of places. They choose one place, and there might be another place that's just as good, but that doesn't mean you get to automatically go to the other place. I mean, someone can move to change, but if jurisdiction is correct where it was filed, it generally doesn't just change. That's what I'm, if I'm trying to make this an analogous situation to something we understand, that's what I kind of hear you saying. Look, they have jurisdiction. Circuit court might have jurisdiction. But wherever it's filed is where it starts, and you play by those rules, even if another place is equally as good.
The plaintiff has a lot of power of choice.
They have a lot of power in Justice Ziegler's example. But they're all governed by the Wisconsin Constitution and the United States Constitution. And there is a constitutional right in the Wisconsin Constitution that gives all citizens the right of access to our court. So if it's filed first in tribal court, and one of the persons has a right of access to Wisconsin court, I would like to know, is there some way that isn't at all offensive to the tribal courts? They provide tremendous service. But is there some way of assuring that constitutional right of access for that person?
Well, I don't know about insuring, but I think that this court has taken care, at least with respect to the 80154 rule, that the state circuit court judges have to look carefully if those constitutional rights are at stake.
And it's filed in circuit court. I want to give you the harder problem.
Right.
I think the statute thought about when it's filed in circuit court. The statute did not think about when it was filed in tribal court and someone doesn't want to be there who has a constitutional right to be in state court. That's what's bothering me.
I guess I would take issue a little bit with the premise, and I can't remember who the earlier speaker was, that said it's not an absolute right. And so...
You know,
But you may not, the court may not have jurisdiction for a thousand reasons, okay? But you can make a problem so sticky that you never have to think about the answer. I mean, if there's a divorce filed in tribal court, a divorce filed there, tribal court has jurisdiction, okay? But the people that are involved in the divorce, one of them doesn't want to be there. That person has a constitutional right to access to the circuit courts of Wisconsin. But our statute doesn't deal with that. We heard a lot from some witnesses here who want child custody determined in circuit court. They don't want to be in tribal court where it started out. They've never been in circuit court. They're frustrated because they can't get there. I'm frustrated because I can't get anybody to focus on that problem.
Here's what I would say. Here's the best answer I can give you, which is to fall back on the process that is already in place, which is if individuals who you've heard speak want their case in circuit court, then the best that they're going to get, it's not an absolute right and it's not an insurance. They can file in state court and they can have a state court judge and a tribal court judge who are presumably entrusted by their respective governments to be wise and just people and apply the laws to the facts. We'll get together, examine the case very carefully, apply the factors that are there, which is a long list of factors, and make a decision. And that ends up being on a case-by-case basis. I think that's the best that there is. There is no insurance. Neither side has an absolute right. There may be tribal members here who are saying, you know what, I really want my case heard in tribal court, but my spouse filed in state court first, and they may or may not get it transferred, because we've heard many stories here today that the transfers were denied. So there isn't going to be, I can't insure it. I don't think there's a way.
I think right now we don't have an avenue for them to file in state court.
Mr. Stencil, is there a statute or a rule that says just because there's a matter in tribal court, you cannot bring a case in federal, in circuit court? Is there such a statute? This is not a trick question.
I don't believe so.
No, there isn't. So just because it's in tribal court not mean that you are barred from state court. You can go into state court, you can file a lawsuit, and the other side is going to say, hey, judge, this has already been filed in tribal court. We don't want you to deal with it until the tribal court has had an opportunity, right? And the circuit court judge can say, I'm going to deal with it. I got jurisdiction. I'm going to deal with it. Or the tribal or the circuit court judge can say, you know, under Teague, the concept was we should cooperate so we do not have two cases going on, and that the first one that reaches judgment should not automatically become the judgment of the case, right? I mean, that's what Teague said. It's not a first judgment issue. So with John Anderson, he might call up the judge in the tribal court and say, "We got two cases going. How do you want to handle it?" And invite all the parties in, and they might sit together, which we know that Judge Anderson has done, and it may have been that that Judge Nielsen has done, sit together and deal with the court with the case, or they may do something else. But there is no bar to a party to bring the lawsuit in the state court. And there's nothing in the statute that says the state court can't handle it, even though it's in a tribal court. The issue is that you run the risk, just as in Teague, of getting two judgments and then having to decide which one controls. But you're not barred.
Right, and I guess to just carry that a little bit further, everyone has the right to go file a lawsuit. You don't necessarily have the right to have it concluded all the way in the end to the forum that you may have started.
But apparently, though, at least the clerk of court in Brown County told people that came in wanting to have state court resolution that they could not accept any filing on that case because it was in circuit court. So maybe part of the problem is our educating our clerks that someone can file an action, although it's been a long time since I practiced law, but when you used to file a family law matter, you had to allege it wasn't pending somewhere else. Maybe you don't have to do that anymore. I've been out of the practice for quite a while. But in any case, you certainly would want to let the courts know that there is a pending action. You wouldn't want to file it without alleging that fact. So maybe part of the problem is just education for the clerk's office.
And then I want to make a plug, which is that I think that if there's going to be an amendment or a proposed amendment along these lines of this issue, that it, at least the forum gets a chance to vet it, talk about it. All of their members can, you know, really bring some wisdom to bear on any language or whatever ends up being proposed.
Why analytically would it be any different than someone living in Hudson, St. Croix County, playing lacrosse, going across the border to a different sovereign, a different state? I just don't see the issue much differently as two sovereigns potentially having jurisdiction. A person who lives in Hudson has a right to access to Wisconsin courts, yet the spouse or the other party filed right across the border, even they both live in Wisconsin. I mean, those rules and those sovereign entities apply and work it out.
Yeah, I think that's apt. I was thinking about that last night and this morning about analogies, and I think that's a reasonable way to think about
it. We had a case
except, the U.S. Supreme Court has said tribal nations are sovereign. They are not bound by the United States Constitution, but Minnesota is. Okay?
That's true.
Iowa is.
That's true.
So there is a difference. Well, if you're saying it's the same thing as filing in tribal court and filing in a sister state, I understand part of the analogy, but it isn't complete because of the constitutional differences that underlie.
I'm saying it's apt in terms of the concept, and I would say as well that, yes, it is true. There's case law that the U.S. Constitution does not apply to tribes, but the Indian Civil Rights Act is on the books, which largely adopts the Bill of Rights and applies it specifically to the tribes. Many tribes in their own laws have many of the same things, not all, but many do, so... You know, I don't want it to appear like all of a sudden it's anything goes. It's
no, and I know that the tribes have worked very, very hard to have their proceedings be, you know, very regular and very predictable. I don't mean to, it's just that the U.S. Supreme Court has made its pronouncement, and I think that's what we have to be in the court.
I guess that's for discussion with us, rather than discussing through
right,
you.
Right, you probably.
That doesn't deal with the jurisdiction.
Feels
the bigger
else.
Issue is raised in the dissents. The whole concept is maybe suspect of transferring anything to the front. That doesn't happen to be my view. What about the U.S. Supreme Court case? You know anything about it?
I know a little about it. It's a big case, and the oral argument is, I think, December 7th,
okay.
And the briefing is pretty much done, and as... Attorney McCoy said, a lot of amicus briefs and a lot of high-powered lawyers on both sides. It's Dollar. It's actually Dalgen, I think. Dalgen.
They
smushed it together. Dalgen Corp. versus Mississippi Choctaw is the actual case. The facts are very bad for the petitioner. There was a tribal... youth who was working at a Dollar General store on the reservation, the Mississippi Choctaw Reservation. He was a summer intern. He's under 18. He was apparently sexually abused by the Dollar General manager, and so the family sued Dollar General and the manager in the tribal courts, and Dollar General went to federal courts in Mississippi and lost. They went to Fifth Circuit, and they lost, and apparently they were able to convince four U.S. Supreme Court justices to take the case. So Indian country is anxiously watching.
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of like Plains Commerce Bank, which had exactly the same history. They lost in tribal court, they lost in the district court, they lost in the Court of Appeals, and the U.S. Supreme Court overruled the other courts in regard to what jurisdiction was available in tribal court given the claim, and that was a claim of employment discrimination, if I remember right. They hired someone in a process that was objective.
I would say that it seems that the difference from Plains Commerce is that in Dollar General, Dollar General had a lease with the tribe for the store, so there's a very strong tie there and would fit both of the Montana exceptions, the consensual relationship, and then obviously when a tribal youth is sexually assaulted, that's a direct threat to the community. So it would seem like those are some difficult facts to overcome, but we'll see.
Well, I really appreciate y'all bringing it up because I was totally unaware of it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, our next speaker, Tracy Metoxin.
Hello, I'm Tracy Metoxin. I currently have a pending case with the United Judiciary, so I didn't really want to speak, and so I didn't want to cause anything with that case. One thing I did want to say, though, was when I went to United Judiciary to file, that was hard for me. It's intimidating, like, being here. I was told what I needed to go and ask for when I was filing some forms that I had to fill out, and they didn't know, or they said they didn't know what I meant until then. I had to call somebody. They got there, and then once they got there, then they handed me the forms. Okay. But when I was there by myself, it was intimidating, and I said the exact same thing, but they acted like they didn't know what I was talking about until I was accompanied by somebody. Then they gave me the forms.
Yeah. You know, I received a note during these proceedings, which I think is helpful, in that the state law library has an extensive list of self-help folks that are available, and it's an online list. So sometimes if you're looking for help and you don't know who to ask for it, our state law library is a big help in that regard. Apparently there are a lot of lists there for people that need a little bit of assistance.
Yeah, I had help in going there, like, and told what I needed to ask for. Okay. It was just who was behind the counter said they didn't know, but then once somebody was there with me, then they gave me what I needed.
Okay.
That was one of the problems that I had when I was filing. But that is, like, as far as I want to say today because
that's
of
okay.
My current pending case.
Right, that's fine.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Nancy Dallas.
She's already on.
Ah, Nancy, you know what I'm going to do?
Are you Linda or Nancy?
No, I'm Linda. Nancy's my sister, and actually she couldn't be here for medical reasons.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, Linda was on. When you're saying Nancy was on, I'm thinking, I didn't think so.
Nancy's my sister.
Okay, that's fine. I am going to call on you at the very end because you are a presenter on one of the petitions as well as our other two presenters, so we'll get back to you, but not right now. Okay. Put my glasses back on. I can't read the writing. Okay, Charlene Casey, is she here?
Justice Ziegler has asked for a break.
I just wondered if you were planning on an afternoon break. We've gone for about 2 hours. We have about 2 hours left. It's
okay.
Up to you whether we're going to go 4 hours.
Okay, well,
no
just,
one
just 1 minute. Now, you have already been up. Is Charlene?
She couldn't make it due to medical reasons.
Okay,
and Frank Grinius sent his papers.
Okay. You know what? If you would file them with Julie over here, she will make copies for all of us and see that we get copies of all of her comments. And thank you for bringing it in. And I think I'm hearing a request for a break.
Maybe what we could do is if someone knows of someone else on the list who isn't planning to present, they could talk to Julie if we take a 3-5 minute break.
Okay, very good. Well, we are now up to Frank Cornelius. So he would be the next person if he is here.
He's not coming. He just said that's the one that filed a written statement.
Okay, but that's not who I called. I called Charlene K.C. Okay, and she's not here either.
Right.
Okay, and so Frank Cornelius is not here either.
Right.
Okay. And so you were giving papers of Frank.
Yes, for Frank Cornelius, those papers of Frank. So Dale Wheelock had a bypass, like 5 bypass.
Oh, my golly.
So he didn't make it either.
Well, I hope he's doing okay.
A lot of stuff going on.
All right. Thank you very much. And anybody else we have now, the next person is Dale Wheelock. We're going to take a break. But if anybody else is not going to be speaking and they're on the marshals list that you all have, please let Julie or the marshal, or better yet, both know, and then we'll see where we go when we come back. So we'll be back
Oh, at 3:45.